in this episode. It's our first chart roundtable, this time focusing on a chart from August 1998. Then roundtable regular Hayley is our guest in the empty compartment. That's all to come on the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. This is Jamie Dyer saying welcome to the show. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can. You can tweet us at 90sNoughtiesUK on Twitter. You can also email us 90sandnoughties@gmail.com or go to the Facebook page 90sandnoughtiesUK. Wow, what a packed show we have for you today. Later, roundtable regular Hayley is my guest in the empty compartment as we discuss all manner of things 90s and noughties. But first, it's the first ever chart roundtable, and I had such great fun with Chris and Tanya recording this. So here it is right now on the podcast. This is a 90s and noughties roundtable, this time trying something a little different. It's a chart roundtable where I gather together a group of people to discuss a chart from a specific week in a specific year. So this time we've chosen the chart for the 30th of August 1998 to the 5th of September 98, and that is from the official charts company, not affiliated in any way, but just thought, well, again, you want to go to an official source, don't you? So we've done so, and thank you to Chris and Tanya for joining us today on this first one. What we shall do is we're going to be looking at the top 20 from this week. I will read out from 20 to 1, and whenever anyone has anything that they have to say about it, just jump in. And that's myself included. So yeah, now that I know, let's start, shall we? It was a new entry in this particular week at 20 with Eyes Don't Lie by Truce, which I have to admit, I have absolutely no memory of whatsoever. And judging by the look of the other participants, neither did you.
So I listened to it, and I think there are very, very small elements that I can kind of remember. But it just goes to prove that this song wasn't big enough. If all three of us are saying, hang on, we're not too sure about it, it clearly wasn't an impact. But I think we've got to kind of take credit for it getting to the top 20, because obviously with these charts in that era, you had to sell up a lot of records and actually sell the physical copies.
No downloads
to actually get into the top 20. So although it's a bit of a shame we can't remember a song that, you know, hit into the top 20, but I think obviously, you know, being R&B styled, I love the 90s because it's, this chart, especially as we go through it, it's a really good collection of the different styles in the 90s, you know, because it kind of, the music goes in kind of eras. And I feel that, you know, there was a big R&B presence in the 90s. And this is one of the songs that reflects that R&B. But unfortunately, just a little bit forgettable, really.
And plus, you know, it was a girl group, Truce. I don't remember them. And 90s had so many great girl bands. Obviously, you've got, yeah, Spice Girls and Bewitched. I used to like them. And Destiny's Child, and probably loads I'm not thinking about. I don't know, Eternal, Honey, which I think are in this chart. So they were competing, I guess. There was a market already, wasn't there? They had a competition. But I think going back to what you were saying, Chris, about it being an interesting week, I wonder that's why you chose it, Jamie, actually, because I was a big fan of 1996 Britpop, and there's still some bands trickling into the charts in 98. I think they kind of peaked again in noughties. That's why I'm pleased about this, actually, because it's got a mix of bands, pop, a little bit of R&B.
It was another new entry at 19 for Electricity and Morning Afterglow. Again, another track wasn't particularly familiar with.
No, and hard to find. That was one, wasn't it? I was like, There's lots of other songs called Morning Afterglow, I've discovered, but...
You don't think that a track from 22 years ago would be that hard to find, because people, you know, had more recordable media then than previously. Yeah, so we'll go further on into the chart. It's a cover version next from Simply Red, The Air That I Breathe, obviously a hit for the Hollies back in the day. And this is one that I do remember. Chris is kind of shaking his head here. I'm wondering, did you like it?
I love The Air That I Breathe, the Hollies version, as you just mentioned. Absolutely love it. Think it is a classic song. I know it wasn't the Hollies. There was a few people who had it beforehand, but everybody remembers the Hollies for doing that song. And, you know, I love Simply Red. I think they're great. Just this cover, it just didn't do anything with the song. I think if you're going to cover a song, you want to reinvent it. You want to create something new, a new spin on it. But this just didn't do anything to it. I mean, obviously, it got into the top 20, but maybe that was because of the name, not so much as the song. But yeah, I just wasn't inspired by the cover. That may upset a few Simply Red fans, but I just, not a fan.
They're switching off as we speak, Chris. They're like, right, what does he know? I felt exactly the same way. I don't remember the cover. And I'm a bit sceptical, as you said, about cover versions anyway. Do they ever better the original? Is it worth doing? And I thought the backing noise and the kind of music they used was dreadful, actually. Mm. So, yeah, again, just insulting more Simply Red fans now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that was pretty much the era where a lot of older bands and artists were starting to record more cover versions. It was almost like a marketing ploy. Speaking personally, a couple of years previously, Status Quo did exactly the same thing, where they made an album of covers. It was the time for doing that. But the number 17 in this chart was a new band that came at you, as it were. Yes, I Want You Back, originally by the Jacksons, I believe.
So Cleopatra, I mean, 90s, I love the 90s. I think everybody remembers Cleopatra for one song, and probably that coming at you song, as we just mentioned. And I just... This is maybe an unpopular opinion, but I thought Cleopatra were like a poor man's Destiny's Child, because they had like one of them was kind of the main vocalist, and they had the other two in the background.
Cleo. That was Cleo.
Cleo, yeah. At the start of the name. And you know, once again, like I said about Simply Red, you know, listening back to their cover of the song, Cleopatra's song, I'm like, there's nothing new to it. They haven't brought anything to it. Okay, it's a bit more poppy. There's a bit more vocal, a bit more you know, effect on the voice. But have you done anything spectacular with it?
No. I did have a quick look at some stats for that song, because I like the debut single. And I Want You Back went to number 4. So that did all right for them, didn't it?
Yeah, not too bad. But I think it's coming on its way down there. But as we come into 16... Brandy and Monica, The Boy Is Mine. Again, another song that's completely slipped my mind. No idea.
Oh, really? No, see, that one I like, I remember. It was, I'd say that's a big sound of the time, actually. It's a reflection of 90s. The video looked very 90s with, like, chokers and lip gloss and stuff. I still like that song, actually. That was, one of the ones I knew.
Yeah, definitely a memorable song for me. I remember that one. And I think... If you can remember it, you know, 22 years later on, it just goes to test how great a song that was. And actually, we saw about stats about that one. That was in the US Billboard charts. It was the first single to jump to number one from under 20 since the Beatles. So that goes to show how big that song
was. Look at that stat, Chris. You whipped that out of your pocket, didn't you?
There we go.
Someone's done their homework here.
I know, he's showing me up. Yep.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great song. And I think it's also pop R&B blending, because you're going into kind of later on in the late 90s, when it wasn't over 1998, but 1999, 2000 was basically pop explosion. And I think this is an example of a song that takes the R&B, puts a bit of pop out of that, and it was just an incredible song. I absolutely love this song, and I still listen to it today.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you said is perfect, actually. It's a really good blend, because I'm not a massive R&B fan. But yeah, as you said, this is pop R&B, so it just ticks the box for me.
As we go on to 15, Ghetto Superstar by Praz Michelle featuring ODB and Maya. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. This is definitely the era where it's featuring everything. That's something that I start to notice as we get into this chart, is there's a lot of featuring.
Yeah, I mean, I like Maya. I liked, you know, she did Lady Marmalade, didn't she, with Christina. And so I like her voice. And I, as soon as I heard it, I thought, oh, yeah, I remember this. That was another one. I thought, yeah. I thought maybe that was Noughties, actually. You know, when you do those Guess the Year challenges, if I heard that song, I would have thought it was a little bit later, interestingly.
So it's interesting you said about Maya, because, yeah, like you said, you sung that Lady Marmalade track. I mean, she's a great voice, but I can't recall of a, you know, a front leading single from Maya. It's always featuring Maya or including Maya. So I'm wondering what happened that she was never put in the forefront of everything and just become a featured artist, but a great voice and a great song. That reminds me so much of the summer, you know, that song. And it's not one I kind of listen to today. I think it's maybe lost its appeal over time, my opinion only, of course, but it's definitely not one that I would go, oh, let's download and listen to that one. But yeah, no, a great song, and I think very big at the time.
Yeah, it got played a lot, didn't it, on the radio. It had a lot of airplay, and it's, I don't know, we haven't really talked about this yet. I remember watching Top of the Pops a lot in this year, so most of these I remember watching, and I remember them singing that one, actually.
Now we go into 14 with a track that is forever remembered, Viva Forever, from the Spice Girls, which was massive at that particular time. Very memorable video as well.
Yeah, so as soon as I heard this one, I haven't heard it for ages. I mean, I like the Spice Girls. I think they did, you know, I like the whole explosion of girl power and girl bands. And this one, I think, was just before Joey left. It was around that time. I remember... So everyone kept talking about that. But looking at the video, have you watched the video recently?
Yeah.
It's pretty weird, isn't it?
It's so weird. It's so weird.
I don't remember
the
video at all.
The creativity. I mean, I always say 1990s and noughties, the videos, music videos, you cannot beat. You cannot fault, because they are so incredibly done. And I think the first time I ever watched Viva Forever video, I was like, okay, oh, that's nice. And then the more times you watch, you think, hang on, that's getting a little bit strange. What was the creativity behind this? And now you can kind of look at it, because obviously Viva Forever, when that was released, obviously it's the last track that Jerry appeared on, and she was supposed to release it with the promotion. And not forgetting, the song had very little promotion, but huge commercial success. And it was actually that time, I can still remember it, I think it was the National Lottery, I believe, that they appeared and Jerry wasn't on stage. And for somebody to come out and Jerry not being there, it was like, what's going on? The press had a field day the next day. They're going, what's happened to Jerry? Oh, she's not feeling too well. And that was obviously the whole spiral of her leaving. And
they might have done that on purpose, though, publicity.
Absolutely. Well, they had to put back the date of the release of this single, Viva Forever. But obviously, it still included Jerry. So I think, although they didn't need as much promotion, because they knew it's already been self-promoted from Jerry leaving. So, and I still think it's a great song. I think Spice Girls had the great flexibility of releasing great upbeat pop tunes, but also some amazing ballads. And I think this one is an incredible version.
I was thinking that. So they had Christmas number ones, 96, 97 and 98. So that year they had Goodbye as their Christmas one. But that would have done a nice Christmas ballad as well, I thought, actually. You know, the husky vocals and stuff. You can imagine snow.
It does have that sort of vibe about it. Yeah, that particular track. Right, let's go to Unlucky 13 with a new entry from Manson, Being a Girl Part 1.
See, I know Manson. I can say Chris looks a bit blank in the face. So, of course, this is a little bit of leftover Britpop, isn't it? And they had a great first album around 96 or 97, Attack of the Grey Lantern. And that's the one that has Wide Open Space, their biggest single. And Being a Girl, I'm quite surprised they did so well in the charts, actually, because they weren't a huge band, were they, around this time? I mean, I like them, but I don't know. So what do you think, Chris? Do you remember them?
Well, I mean, I've never heard of them before.
Oh, really?
Absolutely no, me
not.
Neither.
I watched it, because this song is about 2 minutes long, isn't it? This part one. And I did some research on them, and you know, yeah, it's okay. But I didn't realise they had 17 singles, and I can't even recall one of them. So
not Wide Open Space?
Not even Wide Open Space.
That's their biggest one. I really like them. It's funny, isn't it?
It's just, I suppose, how bands go out there, and you know, you obviously tune into a band or an artist, and then as soon as you've heard them once, you kind of know all their songs. But if you've never really heard them, I mean, I don't mind talking about my mum. I say, oh, this song's come up by this artist, and she goes, who?
Yeah.
Who's this? And how can you not know this artist?
Yes. Yeah, it's yeah, what you're used to or what you've been exposed to. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm pleased that, you know, we're talking about a good mix in the charts. I'm pleased they're there because at least they're representing a different sort of music and sound, kind of rock, kind of punky actually a little bit as well.
Yeah, I like the different genres. You know, we're already so far, we're not even, you know, halfway through the charts. So we're talking about pop, R&B, we're talking about Britpop, we're talking about everything. And I know there's probably some other different genres coming up. And I just think it's a great decade, isn't it? Great decade of music. Definitely wouldn't get bored.
Well, certainly at this time, we're sort of in the crossover period between that Britpop, as Tanya said, into the more sort of pop and dance period. Now, I'll read the next two entries and take us into the top 10. So down 7 places at 12, we had All The Real Good Time. Then 11, Mysterious Times from Sash featuring Tina Cousins. She was just killing time doing that at that particular moment. Pun there, well intended. And then a new entry at number 10 from Madonna, Drowned World, in brackets, Substitute for Love. Yeah, new entry there. What do we think?
I can't just say, I know we're going to number 10, just a really quick thing on number 11.
I told you, his eyes lit up at that.
Oh, I know, it is a tune, and I still hear that on the radio today. So that is a song that definitely has tested, and it's a great song. So I could not say anything about that.
I feel the opposite. So for me, I'm not a big fan of dancing music. So I heard it, I thought, oh, my head hurts. And I thought, what else does Sash do? And I was looking, and they all sound very similar to me. And I know I sound very old saying that. It's just noise. It's just loud music. But
Stay? No?
Oh, I love Stay. Love,
yeah.
The whole Sash, La Primavera.
Sorry, I'm letting down, Chris. Sorry, we were getting on so well. Is this the end? You like that?
Well, I mean, as you can tell, I'm more excited about number 11 than I am number 10, that Madonna song. I know there's lots of Madonna fans, but I listened to it earlier.
Not the best song.
No. Terrible.
I mean, I'm a massive Madonna fan, but more 80s Madonna. And this was from her Ray of Light album, wasn't it? But Strange Choice is the first song of that album. And why would you start off with that one? It did have Ray of Light and Frozen. And I like Frozen. That was good. But I'm surprised the song did so well. It went in at number 10. I guess it's because she's such a huge artist and people are really excited. But when you listen to her albums like True Blue from 86, that's a brilliant album. Every song's really good. And I thought this song, yeah, I did remember it, but it had a long intro. It's like a minute, 10 seconds in when she started singing. It's like, get on with it.
I know, I absolutely agree with you. I think they built a campaign on this because I think the tour was named after this song.
Oh.
And I think even the tour opened up with this song. But, I mean, I would have been very disappointed if I'd bought a ticket and started watching that. I may have walked out and went to get a Coca-Cola because I was that young.
But, yeah, you know, yeah, exactly.
But no, just not really memorable.
No.
At all.
Madonna in that period was a little bit like Kylie about a year later, where she was kind of having a resurgence after a while.
Kylie did better. Didn't Kylie do better with the hot gold hot pants and spinning around in that bar, whatever she was doing? That's the thing. I think her 90s career was so much better than Madonna's. I'm not saying Madonna, you know, who's a better artist, but I think in the 90s, Kylie did really well. And I think, yeah, some of the Madonna songs just weren't as good.
Yeah, well.
Controversial.
On that, let's move on to number 9, down 5 places, Sweetbox, Everything's Gonna Be All Right. Samples Ahoy in that one.
Yeah. I remember the classical music. As soon as I heard it, I thought, yeah. I mean, that's all I felt, to be honest. I've heard it. I thought, yeah, I remember it. I mean, I would never have known it was Sweetbox. I feel like I should remember this for quizzes. Never heard. I don't remember that name at all.
Do you know what? This song, and correct me if I'm wrong, was it not covered a little bit later on? I get the title confused because when I hear Everything's Going to Be All Right, I'm sure E17 did something similar. Is it the same? It's a different song, or it's a different kind of same lyrics, but
different song, isn't it?
Yeah, all right, everything's gonna be all right. That one was that was E17.
Well, that's the one I remember because I don't really remember Sweetbox. So,
and all I remember is the classical music sample.
Yeah, that's what I remembered from actually.
Let's go down to number 8, To the Moon and Back, Savage Garden. One of my favourites from them, better than Truly, Madly, Deeply, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So it made number one, didn't it? And I think it's a great pop song. I really liked it. And I think it's better than Chilly Mad and Deeply. And I like the lyric, because, you know, people say, oh, I love you to the moon and back. And, you know, the fly you to the moon and back. Oh, yeah. And even now, I'd hear that and probably still enjoy it. I think, yeah, a good radio song, good pop song.
Yeah, I remember listening to this one quite a lot when it was released. And I love his voice. It's Darren Hayes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just a brilliant song, and I agree with both of you. I think this is a better song than Truly Madly Deeply. I think you were saying, Tanya, about, you know, loving to the moon and back. Although when you listen to it, okay, it obviously sounds a bit lovey, but then you don't go, oh, this is too sickening. It's actually a really great song. So yeah, I like that one. Very big fan of that song.
I remember on one of the magazines back in the day, they had a CD with a version of this song. It was like a dance version, which I actually thought was better than a single mix.
No! I hate it when they do the dance remixes. Stop it. I'm going to put an extra 5 tempo beats or something in it. So I'm going to stop it.
That's what I hear these days. When I think of that song, that's what I hear.
Oh, really? Okay. So I don't think I've heard the remix version. I don't think I'm missing out on events.
Well, probably not. Well, we go down to 7, down 3 places. What Can I Do from The Cause? A very understated, in my opinion, very understated track here. Very bare bones, if I remember rightly.
I was, pleased to see this, actually. So I had Talk on Corners, the album, as a 16th birthday present that year. And I thought it was a great album. And that single was really nice. Again, for some reason, I was trying to find it. And there's a Tintin Out version. I don't know when that came out. So it took me a while to find the proper version. But I don't know if you remember, and I always remember weird kind of like showbizy stuff. Robbie Williams really wanted to go out with the lead singer, and apparently he kept sending her red roses with "What Can I Do to Make You Love Me" or something, and she kept saying no to him because he was like a player. That's what I remembered from that.
Oh, I don't blame her. more creepy than getting red roses with something about your own song. No, that sounds awful. I like this song. For me, it wasn't my favourite song of the 90s, not at all, but definitely if it came on the radio, you would certainly go, oh yeah, I know that straight away. It's one of those songs, you know, you can, if you played, you know, name the intro of a song, you would get it from it. And I think, you know, that's why it was so successful and just such a lovely chilled out song. Nothing too aggressive.
Simple.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
At that time, they just had a series of really strong stuff, things like Runaway, Breathless,
So Young, that was from that album.
So Young, yeah. Didn't they also do a version of Everybody Hurts, or am I misremembering?
They did a version of Dreams, Fleetwood Mac, or something.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I like them. I don't know where they went afterwards, to be fair. I know those couple of albums and those songs. And I think So Young's a great song. I think we use it a lot as a kind of show opener on our radio station, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's good pop, isn't it? You know, it's not complicated. It's nice.
It just sounds good. And very much listening back to number 6, which was a new entry in this week, God is a DJ by Faithless. And I have to say, I didn't recognise the title, but knew it straight away the moment it kicked in.
Yeah. And I remember, seeing as I heard it, I remember him being on Tour of the Pops and signing that "This Is My Church." So that was what I remembered. But I'm not a big dance person, but I did quite like this. I liked, the lyrics and the speaky part, I guess. Speaky part. So technical.
No, that's great. I mean, I think this is, once again, tapping in on the different genres. You know, the early 90s was very much clubbing. There was a lot of clubby songs in there.
Lots of dancing, yeah.
And I was actually talking about this song randomly last Saturday because I was with a group and we was talking about Faithless and we was trying to think of my friend was trying to think of this song and we were all going, what, insomnia? No, it's not insomnia. It's this song. And we played it. We went, oh, this song. So Jamie, what you just said there, where you don't actually recognise the title, but definitely recognisable from the music. And I think the Faithless was brilliant in the clubs. I was too young to go in the clubs at 13, maybe the school disco, but I'm sure in the clubs when Faithless come on, especially this song, people went crazy for it.
That guy had he's got such a distinctive voice, I think, and it fills the room, even when you're just sitting at home listening to it. Yeah. Let's go into the top 5 now. We finally found number 5. It's a new entry for the Honeys. Finally found. What do we think of this? Because the Honey sort of had a few singles and then they disappeared.
I love this song. I actually had the pleasure I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, I introduced them on stage. We booked them as a
name drop, Jamie, listen to this.
Pick that one up from the floor. But they were lovely. I mean, there was only two of them when I was introducing them. I think there was three originally. But, you know, a song, once again, another song, not just because I brought them on stage 6 years earlier. When they put that one on, it was the song that everybody knew. You know, when you have an artist, they've had lots of songs, but everyone's kind of waiting for that one particular song. And finally found was that. And it was, as soon as they put that on, everyone went crazy for it. And so I remember the song quite well. I'm not sure about both of you, but.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I didn't need to listen to it. As soon as I saw Finally Found, I thought of it straight away. And I liked their look as well. They always had kind of gold, lots of kind of suits. And I don't know if you watched it, but they were in the big reunion, you know, those bands getting together from the 90s. And I think they did quite well. One was a midwife or something. Obviously, her career path had completely changed from pop star. Can you imagine giving birth and she walks in? You'd be like, ah. But no, I really like them. And it's a shame, like, I was looking at comments on YouTube to do with Honeys, and people kept saying, oh, yeah, but who would you pick, Eternal or Honeys? I was like, oh, it's different though. I think Eternal had a kind of more R&B flavour, and I think Honeys more pop, I think, if I had to pick.
Yeah, right. I'd go for Honeys if I had to pick out the two. I loved Eternal, but because I'm more of a pop person at heart, if I had the choice of the two, it would definitely be the Honeys.
I see. Look, I would have picked Eternal. But there we are. So, yeah, we're going to number four now, and a right banger here for Stardust and Music Sounds Better With You. Now, when I first started on the radio, I think I played this practically every show because it just sounds good through speakers.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about before, I'm not a big dance music fan, but I thought the production was brilliant, good bass and memorable. Yeah, and I think now it's still, you can still play it really easily. I don't know what Stardust did afterwards.
But. When you read out a title of a song and you try to stop yourself from singing along to it, this is definitely one of those things, because even when you just introduce Music Sounds Better, I just did it then, Better With You, you kind of want to go into it.
You went into the rhythm.
And I love this. I think it was, if I can say, very overplayed when this first came out.
Oh yeah, completely.
Great banger of a tune, and I kind of lost respect for it because I thought, you know, like any song, okay, oh, it's this song again, you know, it's quite samey. And then it kind of dipped down. But now if I ever hear it, I'm like, this is a tune. Absolutely love it. And I think it's another song that you could put it out now on the radio and it could go with the artist of today. That's my opinion anyway. I think it's a great song. Love it.
Yeah, I always compare it to Turn Around by Fats and Small. It's the same vibe as that. Let's go into the top three and a former number one for Boyzone, and I have to say I'm a massive Boyzone fan, but this is probably one of the worst songs in my opinion. But there we are. No matter what, what do we think?
Do you know, I as soon as I started hearing, I felt a bit sad because of Stephen Gately. I don't know, I just thought that's so tinged with sadness. I mean, at the time I didn't like it. I think listening to it now, I thought it's okay, very ballady. And I just kept thinking, who was my favourite out of the group? I decided it was Ronan. I went with Ronan in the end. But as a song, yeah, I wasn't that bothered at the time, and surprised it did go to number one, actually. Yeah,
I loved Boyzone, and I don't think Boyzone could have done anything wrong in the 90s. I think whatever they put out, people were loving.
What about those long coats? The long coats?
Well, it's fashion, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Whoever sorted their wardrobe out, I don't know.
But I think, you know, before, obviously, because after Boyzone, really, Westlife took over as the Irish, yes, you know, boy bands, etc.
And bigger. They were bigger, I think
they were all, had more global success being Westlife. But Boyzone, this song I loved. I remember back in the day, and of course, you know, God bless, you know, Stephen Gately obviously passing. But I remember this song, especially as a 13-year-old, because I used to, and I will not do it now, obviously, but used to do impressions of Stephen Gately and Ronan. We used to sing along to it, and I think everybody gave it a
little growl. Mm-hmm. Was it the growl?
I think everybody did that, yes.
I'm good. I'm not alone. And the high pitch, obviously, for Stephen Gately. But yeah, I like this tune. But another one that I can probably... I think the good thing about this one, I just want to say, is that I can remember most of the lyrics. You know, if I had to be tested the lyrics, it's one that I remembered. And it's quite lyrical, this song. So to remember it just goes to show how popular and how big this song actually was.
And probably got a lot of airplay, you know, again, you remembering all the words.
I just felt as a fan that it was like a short, like a slight departure, because it's a Lloyd Webber and it's a little bit too musical theatre compared to some of the stuff that Boyzone had done previously. I mean, I'm a massive fan of their first album, which was very mid-90s, half dance, half ballad, and, you know, a couple of covers on there. By this point, I did feel that, was it working? But I do recognise that it's one of their most popular songs, you know, and very much like we were saying with the Honeys and Finally Found, whenever they performed this in concert, this was the one that they were waiting for, and it still is. Right, let's go to number two, and it was a new entry. In fact, we should probably, in this particular instance, announce the two and one, because there were two new entries. Obviously, that week, I can imagine young Chris kind of sitting on tenterhooks, wondering if number two and one were going to be occupied by the right people.
Chris looked very excited when you said number two, so I can guess which one he...
I am recreating 1998 now. This is exactly where I was when I heard the radio. You're repeating. It's going back into the past, and all these emotions are coming flooding back.
Yeah, so at two was One for Sorrow from Steps.
So... Chris, I'll leave you to talk about Steps, but I'm going to quickly say I'm Team Mannix, so we're probably not going to be friends after this, but I'll let you talk about Steps first.
Do you know what? Both two and one, I love both the songs, but yes, it's no surprise, no secret that I am a big Steps fan. So I think coming from their first two singles, this one was the first song where they kind of took on their own. Well, I wasn't saying not completely their own sound, because actually it harks back to ABBA's Winners Takes It All. But it was a good mixture of pop, a little bit of trance in there as well, if you listen to the actual instrumentation of it. And I just thought it was destined to be number one. And I remember sitting here in 1998 on this very week thinking, it's got to be number one. And as you know, I think the charts then definitely were a lot bigger than they are these days. It was everybody wanted to know number one. So when you got to that,
you'd be listening for the countdown. Yeah,
absolutely. And I remember thinking, okay, they're not five, they're not four. And I thought, this is it. They're going to do it. And then obviously when the presenter, and I can't remember who it was, announced number two, I was like, oh no. But I think One for Sorrow is, if you ask any Steps fans or anybody that goes to see a Steps concert, apart from Tragedy, is probably the biggest song that they have had over time.
Not 5, 6, 7, 8, wasn't that
them? 5, 6, 7, 8, I think divided people's opinions, because people think of that as the line dancing, you know, first single, annoying single. I can say that. I'm a fan. I'm allowed to say that. But One for Sorrow really, you know, it threw Claire into the forefront. She was the main vocalist on the track. And it really put Steps up there. And I still think this song should have been number one, and should have been number one, not number two. My opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a massive Steps fan. I like their stuff, and that was my favourite one. To be fair, as soon as I saw that, I thought I remembered liking it. When I listened to it, I thought, yeah, it still works. I like the rain sound effect, whatever it is at the beginning as well. So I watched again Tour the Pops. I remember seeing them and their little dance routine. It's funny how those things stick in your head, but. It's a weird one having Mannix at the top. So when Manic Street Preachers did this, it's their first album that commercially did well. And it was all a bit surprising, really. So my brother, who's 4 years older, was a massive Manic Street Preachers fan when they were quite punky and rocky. So I knew their stuff. And when it got to this level, he didn't like them anymore. He said, oh, it's too poppy. They're trying to, you know, like fit in somehow. So their sound had changed. So... I like the album, I like the song. I am surprised it went to number one, and I think they've had better singles from their older albums. Obviously, it's more rocky, and I don't know if it belong in a pop chart. But I thought, again, it's good to see a diverse, you know, genres of music and different acts. But they did really well. I was looking at what they won so many awards in 98. For NME, they won every single thing possible. They got like six things, and even Brit Awards in 99. For this, they got Best Album, Best Band, Best Something Else. So they also had a massive kind of, I don't think the next album did very well, but this one had quite a few singles. Yeah.
I think also the song itself.
I'm sorry, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, as I said, although I wanted Step to be number one this week, I can understand why, you know, the Manic Street Preachers were number one. I mean, the song, I remember the song, and it's only, I think, if you listen to it a little bit later on, or if you were really a big fan of that time, you realise just exactly the message behind it, and you know that the actual lyrics and stuff. I think it's a really powerful song, emotionally as well, and I think it's actually a great song for today. If you think about the subjects that they touch on, and the music video as well speaks volumes. Incredible with the covering of the eyes and covering of the mouth.
Well, now with the masks,
But just, you know, you're not, you know, you get criticized for speaking or seeing what you say, etc. So I really think that song could actually have a resurgence this year. It would be a great time because I think it's a brilliant song, and for that why I'm going to be excited that it did get number one, even if it did beat Steps.
I'm pleased they did do well. It's strange, isn't it? Well, I didn't realize, I was looking into it, they actually wrote some songs for Kylie Minogue. Isn't that bizarre? I never knew that. Some Kind of Bliss, you might recognize. I heard now, I did actually recognize it. I agree. I think the lyrics definitely were very different around that time. And I think people found them quite strange, because when they just go into the pops, there'd be what was the front man called? What was his name? But he'd always have his shirt off, and the bassist would always be wearing a dress with some shoes. They're all, you know, quite alternative, weren't they? Which is good, again, because I think with Britpop and then this, and more rock kind of went into the charts and more bands, which is, you know, that's what I liked. So I think it was good, actually. And I think that made people start thinking, okay, not just pop music, maybe something a bit more alternative as well.
And I think visual elements sell as well. So as you said about, you know, a top being off, this kind of video, I think music videos sold songs a lot more in the 1990s than they perhaps do now. I think something like, I know it's not in this charts, but something like Wigfield's Saturday Night. Now, if that came on and it didn't have a dance routine, you'd think, what is this awful song that's being played? Only because it had a dance routine, it made it obviously number one. And so it's like this song as well. People remember it from the video, from the lyrics. I remember it from Beating Steps, but I'm not going to harp on about that again. But it just has a really, really good song. So, you know, well done, Manic Street Preachers. I think they also had, you said about the album, they were number one in the album charts as well that week as well. So I think the single and album was both number one. So a great week for them and their bank accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. And another song for the album was Tsunami. I love that one. I don't think it went to number one, but I actually thought that was a stronger single, interestingly. But yeah, no, I'm pleased for them. But I would say, if you've ever wanted to try and listen to some of their older stuff, I think you'd both probably be a bit like, what the? What is this? Because it was heavy. But
Completely different.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that is, if you tolerate this, your children will be next from Manic Street Preachers. That was number one in this particular chart. And just to go on something that you said before we wrap up here about the music video, what we have to put into context about the music video in general in this era is they had Saturday morning TV to play either the whole video or say 30 seconds of it. They had sort of the beginning of those music channels. I seem to remember things like The Box coming up about that time. Obviously, Top of the Pops on a late in the week. So there were plenty of opportunities pre YouTube and the internet to see these things. And so certainly on a Saturday morning, seeing 30 seconds of something, it had to be memorable.
And it did. And it also included the whole kind of the time, because how music is sold, as we all know, has changed. Because back in the 90s, they used to be, for pop groups or for many artists, about an 8-week promotional period where a music video would go out, you would hear it on the radio. It wasn't actually released in the shops yet. So, and the only way you could get it at that time was buying the CD in the shop. Whereas now, you know, you'll hear a song and then they might release the video 2 weeks later, and then it's just kind of throwaway. It's just how it's done so differently. The amount of singles that has to be sold to get them into the top 20 was incredible during this period. I think that song, If You Tolerate This, Your Children Will Be Next, sold 156,000 copies. And that's 156,000 CDs, whereas to get to number one, whereas now a song that will go out into charts, whether it be Lady Gaga, Dua Lipa, anything, they might only sell or download, you know, 20,000 copies, but it's all the streaming which changes. So completely different time and amazing. So 156,000, wow, well done.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, and I guess that's a whole subject itself about the whole music video, because Harry Styles' Watermelon Sugar, obviously people knew it from the album and knew the song, and then he released the video much later after the song's released or something, and then because it's controversial, it then helped the single do well. But it's but I thought when I kept talking about the video, I thought, how, I don't know, and I've never seen, I loved Dua Lipa, I never saw any of her videos, because, you know, it's not as important now, is it? I don't know, it's nice to look at YouTube, and it's easier now than when we were younger, and you'd have to wait till you saw on a TV. Or sometimes on your CD single, you'd have the MP4. Do you remember that? So you could put it in your computer and watch it, and you'd be well chuffed. Be
like, that was a thing for a little while. Yeah, it was like the video single or something. Looking at this top 20 from each of you, which is like the one song that stands out to you out of all of those?
Okay, so interestingly, the one song... Oh, see, there's so great songs in it, and there's such a mixture of songs that it's difficult. So it's nice when you go back for a chance, but I know I said about Steps, but the song that really stands out for me is Mysterious Times, Sash and Tina Cousins.
Because, oh, wow.
Just because okay. it's still a song I listen to today, 22 years later on, and it's just a great song. That's the one that I'm Mysterious Times.
I'm surprised. I thought you were going to say Music Sounds Better With You. That's what I was...
Surely Steps. Money on that one.
I know. But I've had plenty of opportunities to listen to Steps over time. So it's just nice to get the kind of resurgence of the songs from the history. Music Sounds Better With You? Yeah, okay. But definitely Mysterious Times. If that comes on now when I'm out, and of course now I'm old enough to go to a club, mainly a bar now these days, if that comes on, I'm like, this is a tune and I absolutely enjoy it. So... where I wouldn't have that same emotion effect with Music Sounds Better Than You.
Yeah, well, I will go next here, and I'd probably say To the Moon and Back, Savage Garden. It's one of a trio of their songs, along with I Want You and Truly Madly Deeply, that is just around this period, just wonderful. I love the instrumentation in this particular track, and yeah, that's the one that I looked at, and I could hear it instantly. A little bit like you said with Music Sounds Better With You, it's the one that I can hear. What about you, Tanya?
So, yeah, I wish I had time to prepare this, but if it's so difficult, these sort of things, because you want to give a cool answer, don't you? Like, oh yeah, I love the Manics, I'll say them. But I always think music transports you back to a certain time. And that's why, looking at this, I was thinking, where was I? What was I doing? And I'd say the top two that make me think about myself at this age is To the Moon and Back. For whatever reason that is, maybe it's just playing loads. And The Boy Is Mine. I wouldn't even say they're my favourite on that list, but it transports me back to 98, to that summer, spending time with my friends, hearing stuff on the radio, seeing all the music channels we've been talking about. So those two, just because it makes me think of that time. And that's what music's about as well, isn't it? You know, it's got the personal meaning, and it makes you think about what you were doing when you heard that song.
Yeah, I definitely concur, and I'm sure Chris does as well with those sentiments. And with that, we bring to a close this 90s and noughties chart round table. And I'd like to say that if anyone would like to come on and basically do this, then please do get in contact with the podcast, because it's great to kind of hear people's memories about a specific week and, you know, go off in all sorts of different directions. So, Chris, Tanya, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, great.
And once again, thank you to Chris and Tanya for taking part in that chart roundtable, the first one that we've ever done. And if you are listening and you'd like to be a part of a future, just a general roundtable, whatever the subject may be, then please do contact us via email, Twitter, and Facebook. I'll tell you those details in a little while. But first, it's time for this. And now it's time for another edition of The Empty Compartment. Three questions, one guest, and a whole lot of memories of the 90s and noughties. And I'm joined today by a roundtable regular, as she should probably be known. Thank you very much, Hayley, for joining us today, and it's great to have you on again. What is your experience of the 90s? What's like that one memory that you remember from that time?
I just love anything 90s. Basically, anyone that knows me actually says that I still live in the 90s. I live in that era because I just love anything 90s related, anything. It is just a bigger interest of mine. So anything like the TV shows, the toys, the food and that was around at the time, the clothing, you know, you name it. It's just something that's a real big interest. I'd still dress 90s now if I could get away wearing a shell suit.
I totally get it. That it's almost not nostalgia anymore. It's just your everyday life.
No. And I was thinking as well, like the T-shirts that they used to wear, the ones that changed colour, if you remember.
Yeah. Some of the fashion, though, was horrific, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, some of it was, but you've got to love it at the same time. It's the 90s. It was, but when you look back, it was cool at the time. No, you just didn't. And also going into the noughties as well, touching noughties, I can remember when those like parachute pants, as they called them, were like a big thing, you know, like the trousers that were like really baggy. That was another one as well, definitely.
What was that guy's name? The you can't touch this guy, MC Hammer.
MC Hammer, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that concerns our first question. 90s tracks, 90s and noughties tracks rather, that you love to hate. Stuff that perhaps, stuff that was really big at the time, but you were like, nah, don't get it.
I mean, not really, because I mean, most of it I like guilty pleasure wise, really. I mean, really for me, although I'm not really a fan of it, I respect it. I mean, the grunge era, really in the 90s, it's not really my cup of tea, but as I say, I respect it as a whole, and I see that's an example. Well, I wouldn't say I hate it, you know, it's just something that's not my bag, but it means a lot to music now. It's changed music the way it is, and there's a lot of people that would agree with that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, grunge was a massive thing because in the late 80s, early 90s, you had this kind of massive explosion of like dance music, rave music, but you needed something on the other side, and bands like Nirvana coming out of the woodwork, the Smashing Pumpkins and all that sort of, that's more kind of indie thing, which then led its way into the Britpop of the mid-90s with Pulp and Oasis and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's some Britpop bands of it. I mean, Pulp being one of them. I actually really do like Pulp. And you touch in there about Smashing Pumpkins. I actually quite like some of their songs. And, you know, there's some of their songs I actually don't mind. So it's just like, I'd say the more real heavier grunge era. That isn't really, you know, would be a bit too heavy for me personally.
Yeah, but there's always something to like, even in a genre that you don't like. Like, there are certain genres that I am not too keen on, but there are certain tracks in there where you go, that really appeals to me.
I mean, the standout tracks, Smells Like Teen Spirit. I mean, everyone knows it. It's iconic, isn't it? It's just a song that everyone knows.
Especially with that guitar riff. So we've had a little explanation and discussion, and if anybody is familiar with this, you know that from here we've had a small discussion. We might come back to it at a later stage, either with Hayley or with another guest. And now it's time for me to turn the reins over to you, and I don't really know what's coming here. So what's your question?
When you were at school, what's your favourite chocolate bar to have in your lunchbox?
Oh, now, is it? I'm sure I remember that a lot of people, they always say that in lunchboxes you had a chocolate bar, but I think for some people, parents didn't pack it. And I don't remember having a chocolate bar in my lunchbox. Or if it was something like Mars Bar or Snickers or something like that, or maybe even just a Kit Kat or something along those lines.
If I was to say Tracker Bar, would you know what I mean by that?
Tracker Bar. No, that doesn't sound familiar.
I can remember it's more of a nutty kind of bar, and the advert used to be like a squirrel advertising it, if that rings any bells.
No. I'm afraid it isn't. It isn't. I know I used to eat Lion Bars. Do they still make those?
Possibly. I think they do. I don't think they're as big as they were. I've got a feeling they do, but some of them, you know, they're hard to come by, or they just aren't as popular, like a Boost Bar. I mean, that's more noughties, but I know that they're not as big now, but if you look for them, they are still around, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the Whisper Bar is still around.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for those slightly older listeners, they'll remember, like, Marathon. And all those things that come back occasionally that then morphed into Snickers.
Apparently, talking of which, Cadbury's going to release Marathon again.
Yeah, I'm not of an age where I remember it being a thing, but I don't know.
Me neither.
What was the difference in the recipe?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, is it just not the same as a Snickers anyway? That's what I thought it was. I just thought that they renamed it from Marathon to Snickers.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of that is for a nostalgia purpose. It's just to sell chocolate bars. And in a lot of cases, it's just for one supermarket, I think, as well. I think it's just in Morrison's.
I think it is. And then what about talking about or renaming things or rebranding things? Opal Fruits and Starburst.
Well, yeah, aren't they the same? They're the same thing, aren't they?
Yeah. Can you remember when they were called Opal Fruits or whatever? Yeah, it was Opal Fruits was first, and then it got changed to Starburst, didn't they? Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so I remember them being Starburst. I don't remember them being Opal Fruits.
See, I can remember. What about Chewits? Can you remember Chewits?
Chewits. Now, do they still make those? Because they did that ad. I remember there was an advert to the tune of "I like to move it," and it was like "I like to chew it." Is that right?
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird.
I'm sure back in the 90s, they had like a dragon or something on the advert.
Yeah. Yes, I remember something along the... And I'm sure that... I mean, there were loads of like sweets like that. Yeah. That were sort of like juicy type things. And in those days, of course, on children's television, they could advertise a lot more kind of junk food, in inverted commas. So you saw this a lot more. You saw like cereal advertisements and chocolate bars and that sort of thing. And they were geared towards that.
Exactly. I mean, that's touching on that. I'll go back to say back then, adverts were better because they were more memorable because obviously it was like, adverts were a bigger deal back then. They put a lot more effort into the advertising stuff, and they were fun, and they'd always have like they'd try and make them catchy as well, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it really peaked and fell off the moment that monkey got behind the drum kit.
Yeah, exactly.
That was like the last great one.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And that was late 2000s.
It was late
2000s because you'd be sat there and you'd think, this monkey, Phil Collins is playing in the background, and this ape is sat there at a drum kit, and you're like, what's going to happen? What's going on? You're just watching this ape behind this drum kit, and then suddenly it goes into it, and they tried to do follow-up ads with Total Eclipse of the Heart, basically taking clips from the first ad and cutting it, and it just didn't work.
No, exactly. It's like you said, that was definitely... The last one, memorable one anyway, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, for any listeners that are thinking, well, there are memorable adverts now, there are, but not for sort of chocolate bars and that sort of thing. You don't see it so much.
Exactly. It's obviously a sign of the times, and it's all to do with the sugar and whatnot, and they just don't want to, like, advertise it like that for that reason, that they just know that if people want them, like sweets or chocolate, whatever, they're finding them in the shop anyway.
Quite rightly, those things have kind of ceased advertising in some quarters, and some of them have even come off the shelves. Although in a completely different subject, the fact that Turkey Twizzlers have made a comeback is a very interesting thing, considering what Jamie Oliver went through in the mid-2000s. That guy must be really hitting his head right now.
Yeah, he must really hate Iceland for that, because obviously I know they've got exclusive A friend of mine was over the moon when they found out. Yeah, one of my best friends, they were just over the moon. And the weird thing was, is that we were only recently talking about them, and they were saying how much they missed them, and they were gutted that Jamie Oliver got them banned, and that it made their day when they found out that they're coming back.
And yet, you see, your question was, what chocolate bar did you have in your lunchbox? For many kids, and me included, for some of my school life, we had free school dinners. And for some schools, they were turkey Twizzlers.
They were, yeah, definitely.
Which is the whole point in the first place. So if you're out there listening, Jamie, I apologise that they've come back. Hopefully they've changed the recipe, but you don't know.
Yeah. Hopefully a bit more healthier now, Jamie. Hopefully. It's hoping.
Maybe. I mean, changing times and all that. Thank you for submitting that question. I've only done this a few times, and it's always interesting to hear how people have interpreted the brief that I have given them. So now it's time to turn it over to the audience, and an audience related question, 90s and noughties related, hopefully the more random the better. Thank you to Dan, who's got in contact and says, what was your first mobile phone that you owned? For me, because it's a question to both of us, because it's a listener question, I think it was a Siemens phone with polyphonic ringtones, and I wasn't interested in it at all. About 3 years later, I got a flip phone, which was like the height of the fashion. It was like a Nokia or a Samsung or something like that, and it was the height of the fashion. What about you?
I've got two answers for that. I mean, the first one doesn't really count, but I just thought I'd mention it anyway. So I can remember when I was at secondary school, and I had to go. It was actually during the time. It's funny that you should mention this, actually. Well, it relates to recent events with the teams getting their GCSE results as of late. So basically, my first memory is when I went to secondary school to get my GCSE results, and I borrowed my mum's mobile phone. And I can remember thinking how cool it was, and even though it was like a brick with like an area, and it's just like one of those giant phones, I'm thinking that I look really cool popping my mum's phone at this time. And then my actual first phone was a Nokia 3210.
Yeah, everybody, I think, had that. It's certain age, certain time, everyone had that. Yeah. It was like everyone's first phone with the numbers, where it wasn't letters. You had to push it so many times for letters. And Snake.
Snake, exactly, yeah.
I think that's all people did, and very long battery life.
That was the best thing. I mean, they lasted forever, didn't they? It was great.
Yeah, I know for a while, I bought one that was a lot later, when smartphones were in. I bought a phone that was very much like a 3210, because I was like, I don't need internet on this thing. I don't need all this fancy stuff. I'll just have an old school phone. And the battery lasted for days. I didn't use it very much, but it still lasted for days.
That's the thing. I mean, they were the best for the battery life. And I think now, I think Nokia actually released them again, or you can get, I don't think it's the actual 3210, I think it's a 3310 or something. And they've re-released it. And like, for anyone that just wants a phone and with a long battery life for like just phoning someone or sending texts about obviously internet or whatever, it's perfect, isn't it?
They were very much about, not just about the calling and the texting and the Snake and whatever else you could do on it. You could also customize it. People used to walk through markets and there'd be all these like customizable options. Some people would have like pictures of dogs on the back of them or certain designs.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a highlight for me, getting a new phone case. And obviously I was featured on a recent round table in regards to A1, and I actually had an A1 3210 phone case. And obviously that was, I was like so happy at the time, and that was cool. So that's a thing. So
it's a shame actually that the smartphone, okay, you can put cases on it and stuff, but it doesn't have quite the same flavour of the entire phone as this one design.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. So
yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you, Dan, for your question on this edition of the Empty Compartment. And that brings us to the end of this particular segment. But I'd like to say thank you, Hayley, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s with me, Jamie Dyer. Please remember to rate, comment and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can. You can tweet us 90SNoughtiesUK on Twitter. You can go to our Facebook page, 90s and Noughties UK. You can also email us at 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. That's 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. This is Jamie Dyer saying thank you very much for listening and bye-bye for now.